I think, a long way from reading a text to figuring out, right, we've moved from the realm of I guess, legislation to the realm of administrative law.
I thought this meant, I thought this still meant they get very little. Here's when you take Shir Chiyotayev literally, so they're taking a loss on everything they sell, on everything, because they're only selling something to get them to what they need to survive. Which means, whatever, selling your things at the minimum price you can sell them for until you have your $5 a day to buy your two slices of pizza.
No, I don't think so. I think his point is...
No, Shir Bichu Chiyotayev, meaning... Meaning they can get, they can generate 5 days worth of profit instead of just 5 days
right.
worth of value.
And then he says,
$5 a day worth of value.
And then he says the court sets this, and then
the court sets it because you're not going to leave it up to each and every.
And the court's supposed to be generous.
To turn up what will of it.
That's an interesting line.
You lahachmer yoter midai doesn't mean. It's okay. It means we could say that you know Shirchi's title is 2 bagels a day, and so it'll be nice. Well, you have one nicer meal, so we'll give you $15 a day instead of $2 a day. But I'm saying, I don't think it's meant to be, like, so generous. I think it's
okay,
like,
you can say not so generous, maybe it's balancing. Yeah, I guess, I sort of figure, he thinks that when they come to court, and they want this, right, this is an adversarial court proceeding. Because the local merchants are trying to impose restraints.
Right.
So he's telling you, look, they can take it to court. When they come to court, this, right, don't give in entirely to local merchants. Maybe, he does say, but don't go all the way either. Maybe.
I thought your vehicle was the operative word, meaning the only thing they can get is a kidei chiyus of profit. But it's still kedei chiyus.
Not sure. I might think the word yarvichu is somewhat broader. Yes.
I think Yeshua's right at the end. But the point is that the point Rabbi Natan makes in this citation, in the beginning, is that a strict reading of yutaihu is enough for right now, and tomorrow they die.
Right.
Whereas, so you need to add in yarvichu kedei chiyus. And so it's an imprecise, so it's a regular.
Which means, but I think Shir Avichu, if it's not hand to mouth, so then Shir Avichu,
no,
I think.
Point. It's not even hand. It's like, it seems like he's saying, Zilu Zavnu, today.
So that you can live for a while.
No. He has a strict reading.
Yeah.
Of Zilu Zavnu Shir Avichu, last year, the Ihachi of Shir Chaitu Berachud is once.
Right.
And a regular amount is Shir Avichu Kedechi Yutechu.
No. There's no havamina that they can sell the first day and they die the second day. No, I think what he means. So I think what it means is, if you make them do it day by day, then there's always the risk that tomorrow they'll die of hunger.
It's bilachud.
You think he's worried about shirchu taicha means go make enough as you can live today? Why can't they come back tomorrow and ask the same question?
Maybe they could, but then he's saying there's a strict reading, which is absurd. So you need a broad reading. He's saying the strict reading. Shir Chiyotayechu is right now. It's like, we're going to die. And they're like, okay, don't die. And he says, you need to add a word so that you don't have the strict reading, and the word broadens it greatly.
How does the word Yerevichu change that reading?
Yerevichu Kedei.
Right? So they can live, so they're just, if Chiyotayechu still means today, then it just means they can make a profit long enough to live today.
But we have to get out of the problem of that they might die tomorrow, so they have to live on
So they have to be able to make enough to right today to be able to live tomorrow, which is right, which and then maybe the week after, maybe 2 months, right? That's my point.
So what do you think the word Yerevichu means?
Profit, but I also
profit. So I think it's in contrast to he has the start of the lesson of Zilu. I mean, Zilu can mean go, or Zilu can mean sell at a loss.
No, Zilu Zavnu, go sell.
Or it means sell at a lower price.
I think you're right. It means they don't have to sell at a loss. They're
right,
allowed
they don't
to make,
have to sell at a loss. They can make a profit, but it's still kedei chiyusahu.
But it's still
Kedei Chiyus is still a shear of a very small amount.
Could be. I don't know. But it depends. We have to figure out what Chiyus Aichu means now. All right, there was another hand. Yes, Chaim.
I'm not sure that this is relevant anymore, but I thought that his argument was that, traveling merchants need to build up enough livelihood that they can get
So that would be the more generous reading, right? Is they should be able to leave. To me, the most likely reading I would end up is they should be able to, aside from collecting their debts, they should be able to leave in the same position that they arrived. Right? That would probably be my standard in traditional policy. Is that they're here to collect their debts, and meanwhile they should leave in the same position. Right? In the same position. Now we figure out what the same position means. Because let's say if I'm a merchant, but mostly I live on salary, and I'm giving up 3 months' salary. to collect this debt. So do I get to, right, do I get to make up my regular, I think that there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room to expand the standard. Yes, Supreme.
So are we gonna have only mentions food?
Yeah.
But like, does that DAFKA, like if you come in the middle of winter, do you not get to pay for shelter?
No, I think it's just a metaphor. I think he just says they shouldn't have to be in a position where they're worried about food every day. I understand the counter reading is the question is, so three ways to do it. One is could just say selling to live for the moment and then tomorrow will cut you off. And it says no, they can do it every day. And the second thing is selling at a loss till they get to that point, as opposed to selling to make a profit. And a third ground is, sorry, what was the distinction again? Because it works less than your ground.
You are in the middle of winter. Do you get to sell?
Yeah, so we can distinguish whether it's starvation or what. I don't know. I think you have room for all those things. My preferential reading is that he's saying that they're allowed to maintain their position and they're allowed to have security. But I can't demonstrate his words, and this is only the first report we've ever been to town. Okay, we go to the next line. He says, "V'harav Rav Yosef Halevi Omer," and that is
Rimigash.
Rimigash, and he quotes the Rimigash all the way. By the first three lines, he says that it applies only when it's the same quality and only when the buyers are Jewish. And then he says, "V'lo mechuver gaban." He just rejects the Rimigash. So Ramah's a whole new world, right? Because here comes right because he's at least one of Rabbeinu Tam, right? At least one of Rabbeinu Tam's positions reject out of hand. The Rimigash, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rimigash are the two great creative moves. And right, he rejected at least part of Rabbeinu Tam, and now he rejects right, and now he rejects the Rimigash. And he says, fascinating. He says, "Minitnan v'lo yivchot v'tashar." Okay, so he rejects the Rimigash and he says that outsiders cannot be allowed to sell even if they will lower prices. And his proof of this is that there's a Mishnah which records a machloket about whether in-town people can lower prices. And he says that even the position which says that in-town people are allowed to lower prices, because in-town people can say, "Hey, right? Why don't you guys right?" They can say, "Why don't you sell at the same price?" But no, isn't that so? How do you understand the Mishnah Amrli Ozil Ad
Vezavin? That's not his proof, though.
Yeah, he says Miditnan. Right, how do I know that this is the case? From that Mishnah, because the Mishnah has a machloket about in-town price competition. So if the Mishnah has a machloket about in-town price competition, there must be a consensus about out-of-town price competition.
How do we know that it's that Mishnah side here in-town, because he's interpreting about it?
Because
his proof's at the end, the part you put in bold. That's his real proof.
So we'll get there.
That's just an analogous case.
It's a fair question, right? It sounds like it's talking about local cases because it said the storekeeper should not give out candies and things like that. So he thinks we're still in the same universe of local store competition. Yeah. Yes, Ramachal.
I thought it was Shar, and the Shar only exists in the city.
But there's an outsider. Right? You shouldn't undercut the price, right? But you could read it as an outsider shouldn't undercut the price in the city. And then Rabita says no. Whoever lowers prices, but he doesn't read it that way. He says that, right? He says that in the town, one of the merchants should not lower the price, and somebody else says no. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. We cheer people who lower the price in town, but he reads that as, but no one would think that an outsider can come in and undercut the standard price.
Why would you think that if you close the shower means you can't undercut the standard price? Suppose you can't lower the standard price.
It's not about an individual, right? Because the response from Yehuda says, no, let him do it. Right? Not they. Of course we allow local merchants to lower the price collectively. Right? But the question is whether we allow... It's a two kinds of competition. One is free gifts, and the other is... Right, and the other is discounts. Right? So there's a machloket about gifts, and there's a machloket about discounts. But he says both of this is locally. Obviously, also, we wouldn't let somebody come off a boat and start distributing candy. Right, I think he thinks that we don't. Right, we wouldn't let you do that either. Okay. Right, and his framework is the Ihu let le esek bahadei delav bar masi.
What if I could prove that it was possible to starve to death?
This policy. If you think that this is economically so unwise, because we're allowing collusive price fixing.
Right. Or you're saying that I can't come in with cheap food from my place with lots of food to your place that doesn't have so much food.
Well, that actually is a challenge.
I have no economic incentive to ship food to your country.
That is true.
I would be rich in iron.
On the other end, maybe he's a really sophisticated economic thinker, and he knows that shipping in food that is much cheaper at a price that the local farmers cannot compete with ends up destroying local agriculture. And a few years later, right, now all the farmers are broke, and and no one will buy. And a few years later, no one has any food, which is one of the classic, good intentions paving the road to hell cases.
That's what farm subsidies are for.
Foreign aid, right? Foreign food aid often wipes out local agriculture.
Skouski has an opt-out clause. He says that the people could actually go and start lowering the price by themselves.
Well, the problem is no. But what happens if your costs are so much lower that to compete with the outside costs, right? Local farmers actually have to lose money. So then, right, if that's the case, so on the one hand you think you're doing this great thing, you're bringing in cheap food to all these poor people, but in the end what you do is make sure that they have no local food at all. And if your costs go up, right? So A, all the farmers are bankrupt now, and they don't have any money at all. And right, if the local economy was largely farm based, you've destroyed it.
He says it's all to the people in the city. I don't know if you can change the shop. He says they can go and complain.
Right, but so if local people, right, so he says if a local person wants to undercut, so they presumably have a similar cost structure, so they can go to the other people in town and say, look, right, I'm competing,
well,
your price is artificially inflated. Pardon?
The Eastmans think the Stam people can.
It's just people.
So Bnei Ha'ir can say. So, all right. So we have different models, right? So one model is there is a shar, and there's a regulatory, right, and he wants to lower prices. So all the other merchants in town come and say to the Beit Din, he's undercutting our prices. You should stop him. And the Beit Din says, what do you mean he's undercutting your prices? He's selling at a fair price. Match it. Now, in a more sophisticated environment, they might respond, no, his prices are predatory. A really complicated case is, we say, we can't match his prices because he has a lower cost structure, and we can figure out why does he have a lower cost structure, and so they might claim he has a lower cost structure because he's hiring illegal immigrants, right? Whereas we're paying Social Security. And the Beit Din has to figure out, right, if it's willing to. He has lower prices because he doesn't have disability insurance than we do. And the question is whether it's wise for a Beit Din to, right, or under what circumstance a Beit Din will say, no, that's not a, you can't say to them, match my prices, because it's against the public interest to match the prices, because his lower cost structure involves things which are against the public interest.
Wait, what did we show?
Pardon?
I thought we were on virtue ethics.
You thought we were on a virtue ethic?
I thought we were discussing this all, like, inside virtue ethics.
What? No, I'm trying to oppose, that's my, I'm trying to oppose it. I'm trying to say that every policy like this can be understood in very sophisticated economic terms. I have to figure out which one they're reading. Right? So I'm giving you a very sophisticated model of, right, how this. We're saying that outside merchants have a different cost structure. So, right, so as Rabbi Magash said, all we care about is the buyers. And Ramban says, no, we don't care about the buyers. We care about the economy. Mm-hmm. Right? If you allow outside merchants who have a lower cost structure to compete, what you're going to do is end up destroying the local economy. Inside merchants, you can say, compete on price. And then I'm saying, so in Ramban's system, it might very well be that that if it turns out that the competition, the lower prices for inside merchants are based on a lower cost structure of which we disapprove, Ramban might impose regulations there also.
Why did we start disapproving of technology?
Not technology, but work.
It's all technology.
But workplace safety. So maybe Ramban says, you know what? If your competition is child labor, that's why it's cheaper. I don't want child labor.
I don't know.
You're allowed to require.
No, I don't know where you're getting this from.
He's not. He's saying.
No, I don't know why you would think that would be the case. Like, I don't know why you would think that this was even.
Because I want to know on what grounds. I want to know on what grounds Ramban distinguishes Why does Ramban reject out of hand the Rimi Gash? Right, why does he think the Rimi Gash is wrong if in fact it benefits, if in fact it benefits purchasers? Why is Ramban choosing, right? Why is Ramban choosing against? I don't think there's any. There's no virtue ethic basis.
No, about
for distinguishing.
Protecting the commerce of the, like, that's also a virtue ethic.
Protecting the commerce is a virtue ethic?
No, as in, like, we're just trying to be nice to them, B'nai Mata, or whatever.
We're not being nice to B'nai Mata, we're being nice to the merchants of B'nai Mata, as opposed to the opposed to the consumers. But we're not deeply interested in the because we're willing to.
Unless we're back in the buyers, unless we're back in the seller's market, buyers market, whatever. Like, unless this is a case where we need to protect merchants, we don't need to protect buyers.
Right, that's what I'm suggesting.
There's an empirical disagreement then. It's not an empirical disagreement. They're just operating different realities. So the Rimi Gash thinks.
So it could be that they're operating different realities. It could be that they have different interpretations of the same reality. It could be that the Rimi Gash thinks that in the long run, right, the Rimi Gash is a globalist, that he thinks in the long run everything will come together and we should have free trade agreements everywhere because that'll benefit everybody.
He doesn't think so.
The Rimi Gash? How do you know?
I thought he was I thought he needed distinct differences. That was
in Imeka Yosef's interpretation, which we'll see comes from the Ramban. Right, we'll see he gets it from the Ramban. Right, so all these conversations. Right, all these conversations now can be read into, right? And even again,
since they're not being said, you can read into whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
I can read the Ramban as a staunch legalist, and this is the rule. All I know is the Ramban says the Stam case is this. It's not like the Rimi Gash in that we're not going to let outside people in, even though we'll lower the price because whatever, because we're protecting the merchants for reasons, and we can name 10 of them and have no idea. And then we could either say the Ramban's sticking to this no matter what because that's the proper thing to do for any one of whichever of those 10 reasons will still apply once we go through this logic. Or we'll say no, the Ramban's not. The Ramban obviously understands that every case in monetary halacha is going to have some nuance to it. And this is the general rule that we're going to start with. And if I have a compelling reason to say that something's not going to apply to this rule, depending on which of those 10 possible reasons this rule fits in, so then we'll follow that compelling reason. You can say whatever you want here,
So now I have to figure out, so how do we decide law when we can say whatever we want?
Based on whatever you think is at that time most ethically expedient.
Maybe.
So you'll take this as the starting point, and then on a case-by-case basis, you'll have to...
Yeah, that's not law. Case-by-case doesn't... Case-by-case is bad law, because no one knows... Because law needs to be predictable.
Yeah, that's what this kind of sounds like, though.
I don't know. I'm feeling, I'm open to all sorts of things.
I'm saying, let's assume I'm right that there's no way to honestly read anything more into this Ramban in one way or another because there's just far too many variables flying around.
Uh huh.
So how would you determine law?
I don't know. I might, by the most ethically expedient, I have to figure out what my ends are. Maybe I'll come up with what I think is the best economic policy. Maybe I'll come up with what I think is the best economic policy for Talmidei Chachamim. Maybe I'll come up with the best, right? Maybe I'll come up with the best economic policy for my community, which we will then define as either the Sharon community, the Boston community, the modern Orthodox community, right? I have all sorts of options. I don't know yet.
So maybe there are buttons. Maybe the Ramban doesn't really think there's a cohesive theory here, and he just wants to make sure that the law works for his community at that time.
Maybe. I don't know. Yes, Elliot.
He kept using the word merchants.
Yeah.
I think the Ramban is very clear at the end to talk about B'nai Umanin.
So you think you're going to now introduce the other distinction and say that maybe, right? If we follow the claim of Rabbeinu Tam, that the capacity to keep out only applies. So is that true even to outsiders, or is that only true for people in about mavois?
But he rejected.
But I think adding the term merchants versus b'nei umanin, which I think the Ramban does set up as a conflicting, even if he rejects it, he does set up a distinction.
Yeah.
Is important to understand whatever reasoning is behind the Ramban.
Could very well be. It could be, right? So it could be that he feels no need to protect sellers because sellers, right? Sellers' costs are pretty should be the same everywhere. He only needs to protect producers.
That could very well be.
Could be.
That's a very sort of that there are old theories of economics that are rested on that.
I'm fine with that. I don't know which of them Ramban knew. I'm okay if at the end of the day you all conclude that we have to start halacha from scratch. And I think generally, I guess you get right, I think that generally, that if you want to, you can think of halakha that way without being untraditional in the slightest. And if there are enough gaps between, there are enough lack of detail in the text, and enough gaps between the text reality and our reality, that you often have a great, great deal of flexibility. And since I haven't done Dini Mamonos before systematically, so this is all fun. I think there's a lot of room. Okay. In the end, right, Rabban makes another argument, which Yesh thinks is the real argument, right, the boldest section. So having said, right, let's just go to Elias line first. So let's say, in the underlined section, so we say, V'chein nami safe. Pardon?
It's all underlined.
Yeah, so the first line that goes all the way to the end of the line.
Okay.
Right, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the bottom. V'chein nami, well, I haven't done that in a long time, 10 lines from the bottom. V'chein nami sefer de masnisim behachi riata. The sefer of the Mishnah seems to read that way. The lo pligi rabbanan for Rabbi Yehuda, this is where Elia goes, ela bevali umnius. Right, that the rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda are only arguing about craftsmen. Ava misha ein lo leireid umnus, mishem merevach tare vade lav kol kimini, vibo b'nei mase de lozul gabayhu, yistim al hasharem o yeshiva b'nei en echad me'iro. So he says, all this, right, the whole argument of rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda is only, right, about whether we praise people who lower prices. It's only talking about craftsmen, but if we're talking about sellers, so he seems to believe that if the people of the town want lower prices just for resellers without changing a cost structure, all they have to do is convene the local regulatory commission and lower prices, because Ramban assumes that the reality we are in is that prices are established by a town board. And what and the whole reality here is that somebody petitions the town board for permission to discount.
It doesn't have to be regulatory. It doesn't have to be a commission. It could just be a bunch of craftsmen together decide.
No, because the bunch of craftsmen are never going to decide lower prices.
No.
The problem is the buyers want to lower prices.
Yeah, but the people who come to them, I mean, boycott. If you have a small market economy, you can boycott.
Yeah, but he says Yisanu al Hasharem. To be Masna al Hasharem is a formal regulatory decision by a town council.
It is?
Yeah, I believe so.
To some degree, we still have this, don't we? We fix prices on basic food goods.
In Massachusetts, right, on milk.
In many places.
Right, so we have support. We have low. We have
massive subsidies on gas.
Yes, and we have minimum prices on milk, right, which is an alternative thing, and cigarettes. For opposite reasons, right? Minimum prices, right? Milk to preserve the milk producers, and minimum taxes on cigarettes to keep people from buying too many.
Wait, milk.
Yes.
The dairy industry.
Yeah. Because if there were open competition, they would, right, milk prices would collapse, and all the farm and all, everyone, no one would be able to make a living.
No one, meaning no small farms or no big farms or both.
I think certainly no small farms, and I think in general, it protects the dairy industry. Now you might say the dairy industry is being propped up artificially because really most of us are lactose intolerant anyway, and why should we be buying milk? Right? But to preserve the dairy industry,
there's so much competition in the dairy industry that the prices should be as intolerant as zero. Is that what you're trying to say?
Below the prices should be below cost. I think.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
There's not enough of a market. I think that we artificially maintain the prices. I think that if there were a free market, prices would be driven down to the point that it would be that. People couldn't make a living off it, and they would just leave the business. There isn't enough of a natural market for milk to sustain.
But then the prices would go up again.
There wouldn't be any. There would be a much smaller industry.
Oh.
Right. Okay. At these prices, really, the industry should be much smaller. I think that's the theory. You can go research it.
Yeah.
But doesn't milk have a... I think there's subsidies on milk.
That's what he said.
Yes. Yeah. Right. But we saw that in an interesting way. Yes. Yeah. What was the other way?
I read it as if someone already has a business open, so you go wherever you want.
So you want to read omnius and non-omnius as people in the business and not in the business, as opposed to omnius versus sellers.
Yeah. I read omnius as opposed to misha ein lo leire lumnus, someone who's not allowed to. Misha ein lo, someone who doesn't have someone who's not allowed to, meaning someone from outside the city. Vada Apple Kamina. He doesn't have a right to come in just for this concept of making prices lower.
Hmm.
Because again, the last line, according to what you read, the last four words don't make sense. What's the second option? Yoshiva Beinehinachami Iran. You can just add someone else from already inside the city.
Yeah.
So according to what you said, it's sellers versus producers. So why can't someone just become a new producer? I mean, you're saying someone can't become a new producer, but that's one of the two options he gives you to lower prices.
Well, I think it means that you can set somebody up, right? You can tell somebody, look, we'll let you enter this business if you lower prices, if you sell at lower prices.
Sorry,
right.
How are you reading Avon Mishnah and Leviathan?
So. Right, so one possibility was, but somebody who doesn't have a profession is just a seller, and now you're reading, he's reading, maybe that's better, but somebody who has no right to open a business at existing prices, right, because he's not a member of the city, doesn't have the power to do so just because he's lowering prices. Because if the local people want to lower prices, I don't think it changes that much.
Wait, so what are you reading?
So let's read it. Right? The Mishnah also proves this claim that we don't allow outsiders. Yeah, I think it's probably a better way to read it. I don't need to introduce Eliot's distinction, right? That the difference is just that if you're already in business in the city, so then you have a right to compete on price. But if you're an outsider and you have no right to be in this business, so then we're not going to let you in just because you can lower prices. Because if we wanted to lower prices, we could lower prices without competition. Or going to someone who's not in the profession already and saying, we will give you permission.
Or at least he's in the city.
The first option is, let's just lower the prices by fiat. Right? And the second one is, we'll introduce local competition.
Okay. Why can't we say it's
I don't think that's what it's not sharon means. Let's fix the price. Okay.
So what he's arguing is that we do want to benefit the consumer, and we do care about the consumer, but the better way to do it is internal competition, so we don't have to collapse the market.
That sounds like his response is that he seems to think that there is that all the benefits of competition can be gained without allowing outsiders in. Because, first of all, if it's a reasonable price, we can just fix the prices that way. It just means that we made a mistake in when we set the prices. And if they won't agree to that, if we can't enforce that, then let's just set up if this is a workable structure, then let's set it up. So the problem with that is what happens if you can't do that because the outsiders have a cost advantage. Right. That's so he has to exclude that. Yes, Janet.
I guess I'm not seeing how we're reading it as any better for a person inside the city. Like, he says, Kevan Jehu Ha'amin Techila, Love Kol Kamine, right?
Yeah.
So it's about who comes first. So why does it make it any better? Or am I reading that wrong? Why does it make it any better
for
someone in the city?
So he's trying to figure out, right? Let's put all his cases together. He says that in Rav Huna's case, you have one person in the market, and one person trying to enter the market. So in that case, he says the guy who has already opened it is allowed to prevent competition, unlike in the store case where both of them are already in business.
Right.
And he says, but
isn't this a continuation?
Right. So, but this is all part of a defense of his claim. That outsiders are not allowed to, enter competition. They're both in the business already, just they live someplace else. So you might think, okay, they're like two people, they're like stores. And the answer is no, they're outsiders. So they're right. So they're as if they're not already in the business. And you'll say, but they have a plus, right? They'll lower prices.
Sure.
So the answer is, well, if we want lower prices, we have two solutions. We can lower prices by fiat. Or we can set up an internal competitor. We don't need an outside competitor.
Right. So I guess to me that explains why you can't bring an outside competitor in, even if they're already in the business.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see the answer to whether you can have someone who was not before a blacksmith or whatever, or selling that particular product, suddenly start doing that. To me, like that, I don't read that in here.
Right, so that's the question. So he read the Machlokas in Ruch HaKamen and Behuda about Lo Yichus Lashar, L'chora, as being about whether if you're not going to lower prices, so certainly you can't open another business in the same mavud. But what happens if you claim to lower prices? So that he thinks is the Machlokas in Ruch HaKamen and Rabbi Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where Rabbi Yehuda says, don't, and Ruch HaKamen say, if you'll lower prices, that's fine. Right, and I will point out that maybe that instead of lowering prices, we can go back to the first guy and say, we'll keep him out, right, just match his prices.
Right.
And all this goes through, right, but I'm again assuming a regulatory apparatus.
Yeah.
Which we might just say regulatory apparatuses are bad, so let's prevent that. Yes, Chaim.
Is he bringing a raya from, like, Rav Huna to our case?
Well, he's working in the realm of Rav Huna Breid Rav Yehoshua, right? And he's saying, is he bringing a raya from Rav Huna? No, I think he's working in the realm of Rav Huna Breid Rav Yehoshua, where everybody agrees that you can't keep out a member of your mavoi, but the question is, maybe you can, right, there's some other geographic realm where even Rav Huna Breid Rav Yehoshua believes you can keep out competition.
Is raya,
yeah.
The distinction between whether you're running a business or not is based on Rav Huna's...
He does use Rav Huna, this is true. He says, Kan amrinan le'el gabei bar mavoa. That's fair. I don't know how to work that out yet. Good point. I need to work the cheshbon out. Okay, I want to at least finish Ramban, or not even finish Ramban. At least finish starting Ramban. This is great, by the way. This is fine to point out weaknesses in what I'm doing, and to point out weaknesses in my economic understanding, which at the least is probably better than some other people handle this again. But we can make it much better. Hold on, I need to finish the thing. Okay, so then he says one more line. He says, so you can certainly prevent somebody from a different town from competing on price. So he says, if we have any case of protectionism has to last, right? This is the origin of the Dimukei Yosef. He said, if there's any case of protectionism, then it has to be that protectionism can survive a claim of economic benefit, because opening competition will always lower prices. So if there's any case where anybody says you're allowed to keep out business, it has to be a claim you can keep out business even though it lowers prices, because competition always lowers prices. Right, so this is an inversion of the argument. Rimi Gash said, obviously this doesn't apply if you're going to lower prices. And he says, no, if it doesn't apply when you're going to lower prices, then it's never going to apply. And he doesn't yet, but he doesn't here make the distinction yet. The Miki Yosef solution to that is, so you know what? We'll only allow competition if it lowers prices dramatically. Right? The Ramban doesn't say that. The Ramban doesn't have that new fancy move. He says it must be that lowering prices is irrelevant, because you can always resolve, because he believes that you can lower prices, whenever you want anyway. Yes, Avinon.
What is takanat lochim?
It would help the buyers.
Takanat lochim is what he's against.
Yes, he says. Obviously, it would be a benefit for the buyers if you were to allow competition in. So, if you ever allow protectionism, it must be that you allow protectionism even when the impact of protectionism is to deny a benefit to buyers.
So, takanah is here, like in the sense of benefit.
Yeah. Okay. Elish mamina kevan dehai isle pseda. So the result must be that even though these buyers sustain a loss, Lav kol kamina, they don't have the power. The leisei bar masa achrisi, the litkin is a lochim, right? You don't have the power to allow people from other towns in. to help the buyers, v'yafsi l'mokrim, and lose the sellers. And lose for the sellers. Right, the Rimi Gash took an explicit position that we help, right? He said the buyers can't do a thing that will cause a loss to the sellers. The Ramban said the sellers can't do a thing that will cause a loss to the buyers.
Is this price fixing? How will sellers get together and hurt the buyers?
So I assume they're dealing with a regulated market. The sellers can come whenever an outside merchant comes in. They can say, "Don't let him unload his merchandise." And the Beit Din will say, "Okay." That's all. And if he tries it, they'll dress up as Indians and climb on board and throw his tea into the ocean, whatever it is they want to do to prevent him from selling his merchandise. Okay, Ella Shema Mina came to do that. But now we have a whole new line. Well, Bnei Hamadina, Rashoin Lahasnos Shimkor Bekach Bekach. But he says, so now Ramban says, I do not think that the interests of buyers trump sellers. And I'm not going to let buyers bring in outside competition to compete with sellers. But he says, buyers are allowed to, right, because buyers presumably control the majority of the town council. Buyers, right, Bnei HaMedina, right, the democratic populace, are entitled Lahasnos Shimkor Bekach Bekach. They can set a condition that anyone in this industry has to sell at a fixed price. Vim Lav, Yoshiva She Yoshiva Shamacher, and if not, they can simply take away your license.
Wait,
Bnei HaMedina
is Bokrim or
Lokrim? Bnei HaMedina is the town council, which is presumably a majority of buyers, because in every industry we'll have more buyers than sellers.
Unless they're lobbying groups.
Now, it might be that this is a, right, the Ramban here is being naive, because he's assuming that, right, the town council will in fact reflect the interests of the majority, as opposed to the interests of those bribed by the minority. Right, but in this very nice world where the town council genuinely reflects the interests of the interests of the buyers. But then he has a fascinating line. Right, so they can take away your license. They can fix a price. They can say, "We'll take away your license if you don't fix a price." But now he says, "Uvilvad b'shar beinoni shi'afel lishneihem." But we can't have a democratic revolt where the merchants can't make a price. The town council's capacity to fix prices is limited to reasonable price regulation.
So why isn't that at that price already?
So why isn't it at that price? We have a whole question. Why won't that happen with the invisible hand of the market? So Ramban is not Adam Smith.
It's not an invisible hand, it's a fixed hand. So meaning if we're fixing it at this price, which is equitable for everyone, why haven't we fixed it at this price already? Unless it's just a case of where, like, we're bringing new information that, like, stuff's cheaper than it was a year ago, or people have more money so they can afford more, or people have more money last year so they can afford more.
Merchants over the value of enter leave.
It might be that normally, right? Might be normally we allow merchants to set their own prices until there's a complaint. Okay. Yes, Avinel Ben Chaim. Yes.
Okay. Two reading questions.
Yeah.
V'imlav sheyoshivu sham acher. You read that as replacing.
V'imlav sheyoshivu sham acher.
So that could be read the way you read it, as I will replace you with someone else who is willing to follow my rules. The other way to read it would be as per the previous sentence. We can mandate for more, you know, there should be more ice cream stores in town so that there's better.
So it's not that we'll replace you, that we'll just
add more people to compete with you, me, right? It's like Yoshivu Benihem Achad Mi'iran.
Yes, okay, you're right, that's probably better. Good.
The other thing is, Ubivat Bishar Ben Sheyafel Shnehem.
Yeah.
In line with that, I'm wondering who is the Shnehen. Obviously, one of them is the original seller. Now, the second person could be either the buyers or
the new sellers.
Or both.
No, but we're talking about price.
Yeah, I don't think we're... higher price is better for all sellers.
It could be that the mechanism, you bring
price.
In a new consumer, yeah, and he offers a price.
Right, they have a lower price because it's good for them because they get more business.
He says they can lower the price, otherwise they'll introduce competition, and if they do lower the price, then it has to be a good one.
I stick to my reading on that one. Yes, Chaim. Okay, However, after all this, he says, "Umiu, ilo shavu iske hadari." But if they're not doing, if not engaging in the same commerce, vaday mudina, certainly we concede. The matzul lememarle, they can say to them, "At iske griya, you have bad merchandise. V'hach iske shapira, this is better merchandise. Uchi iske achrita damia." So it's as if it's an entirely different business. V'hal leslach to kavasug, because you have nothing like it. So then,
this is like totally contrived.
It's like totally contrived. By me or by Ramban?
By Ramban.
Ah, okay.
Whatever.
Why? This is just a new extra
thing. Tell me that if I bring in a hat that's made of a finer quality felt, that it's not going to affect the hat industry already existing.
So this is exactly, I hope we'll all talk about this, right? This is what the economists want to talk about tomorrow, is, right, how do you, right, the question asks them, what determines the same business? To what degree is quality relevant? Those are all, I suspect that Ramban, you'll say, will run into the same problem that we tend to think that all such regulatory mechanisms enter, where we just end up making, same as censorship regimes. I thought, in censorship regimes, it's clear, whatever you try to censor, so that's just an opportunity for the artist to make fun of you. Right, we'll find a way to engage in double entendres.
I mean deliberately contrived. I mean that there are certain industries that he has in mind.
Uh-huh.
And there are other industries which he has in mind. And some of them he feels that the supplier is need to be protecting, others he feels the consumer is need to be protecting.
So this is just,
he's going through a contortion to come up with an explanation that satisfies his economic reality.
This isn't his kiddush, right?
This is his kiddush, right? No,
he's against the Rimagash. He rejects the Rimagash.
He's accepting,
but he's taking this part from the Rimagash.
So he is modified, right? He has, right? So we could set up a, you know, now we could set, we did out of order, now we can set up a chain, right? The Rimagash says all that matters in the end is lower prices. Ramban says,
No,
Rimagash said that you have to. Rimagash said that all restrictions on competition only apply in cases where it won't lower prices, but it won't lower.
No, but he also talks about the quality of the goods.
Yeah,
that part's not a kiddush.
Yeah.
Yeah, the quality of the goods he buys into the Rimagash. So Tova wants to say that's just because he wants to regulate some industries and not others,
no,
because
way
quality.
You can say that we're going to keep somebody out because they'll lower the price, but we're letting the new quality in. That means
you have grain salesmen, right? Somebody's selling wheat, somebody's selling barley. Like, they're clearly too. Yeah, this is just to make
Wonder
bread.
Is like that's not a Shapir.
It might be. Wonder
bread.
If you're talking about grain salesmen.
Like, yeah, okay, fine. If the only product in the supermarket is Wonder Bread, everybody's going to buy Wonder Bread, even people who want 7-grain Ezekiel bread. Okay?
Yeah.
By introducing 7-grain Ezekiel bread, by like necessity, the Wonder Bread is.
But that's okay.
No,
I don't think he's saying.
No, but that's okay, because the people selling Wonder Bread to the people who don't want Wonder Bread.
That's the case where we allow the market.
No, but it directly affects prices. And like to say that
what Tom is saying is that if it's really an interest of the merchant issue, right? So then why is it? The question is to figure out why is it that he is, right, that his interest in, he really, it sounds like if we were to say it, you know, and this is not going to come out good, right? His first interest is the interest of the merchants. His second is the price interest of the merchants. His second interest is the price interest of the buyers. But above all those is his quality interest.
Yeah.
Why? Right? He wants the best, the towns in good, he wants the widest, he's interested in the widest quality of goods being available. Now he allows in both higher and lower
quality
competition.
Yes,
Elliot.
So I agree with Tova that this is not sophisticated economic analysis on part of the Ramban, but I do think that we saw early in the Ramban, that he does seem to have an emphasis on different types of goods throughout, and that having accessible prices is important for the buyers, but having access to all different types of goods is a very high value. So yes, introducing the 7-grade Ezekiel bread might affect Wonder Bread. Even now, I don't know if Ramban would think of that, but it's clearly a high value that all these be accessible to the people.
We should have both Ezekiel bread and Wonder Bread. That's our best. That's our core priority.
Yes.
Which is an odd set of priorities,
I mean,
I think. Yes, Ramban.
So I go a little bit further than Elliot, and I'd say that but his first duty is to the consumer. He just happens to think that in this case, there's a way that you can give the consumers what they want without letting outside merchants in to adversely affect the merchants.
Sorry, so we can fundamentally say he's not having a moral debate with the Rimagash. What he's having is an economic theory debate, right? Is it possible to have all the benefits of competition without it. So I tried to find a way to split the difference and to say that the reason he sets up this distinction is because he's willing, because he thinks that outside competitors, you run the risk of distorting the destroying the local market, because outside competitors can have a different cost structure, and that's what his that's what his underlying theory is, and that may or may not be true. But I think this is a great conversation, which we all need to be thinking. Like, so how does our conception of what is reasonable economics relate to halacha, and to what extent do we sustain halacha if it turns out that we say, you know what, the halacha as it was is roughly as effective as price controls under Nixon were for controlling inflation long term, which is to say, I think not very. I think most people agree that was really not very. So what happens if the halacha is, it just doesn't work? It doesn't achieve the ends that it's intended to achieve. What happens if we have two theories in the halacha, one of which does work, one of which doesn't, but the one which doesn't is a minority position? But the one which does is a minority position. Okay, it's Avi and Yish.
The first time we saw this quoted and inside, it doesn't look like this is working about an economic end at all. This Ramban, that a different quality thing is actually a different end. The point is, he says, at the end of the day, I can't tell you that the silk product, that a silk sweater is the same as a scratchy wool sweater. And so I can't stop you from selling silk sweaters in the town. It has nothing to do with economics. At the end of the day, it's
just practically. He would want to legislate.
Perhaps, but it's irrelevant to the law. It's the first framework. It's a legal consistency.
Or the Ramban views it wholly in terms of competing with existing sellers. So if there are no existing sellers, there is no...
So this is a place where... So this is a place where the formality of the law, right, prevents him from achieving all his ends. Because he can't find a way. Then the interesting question is, what happens if we discover that we actually now have the capacity, which he didn't have, to determine which businesses are... We can set up a standard, right? You have any business which will end up overlapping more than 30% with an existing market.
Maybe
right.
He's right. Maybe the example I came up with was, we only had in this country home on printings of the Talmud. And they're not easy to read, and they have various issues. And then one day in Jerusalem, somebody comes to Yosemite. And it's wonderful, and it's easy to read. It has all these additions. It's all very nice. And are we not allowed to sell it? It's so much higher quality. It'll kill the Talmud company. But it's so much higher quality. This isn't the same Talmud.
Right, so that's a whole new question, right? Because you're now introducing a new factor, which we haven't gone back to, which we'll do tomorrow. And I thought that we're going to do Ravanis, both tomorrow and tomorrow, which is whether Runis competition is a different factor than...
But even at the end, it's like someone's going to still buy Talmud because they're cheaper. And they'll become cheaper.
So then it's not Runis.
Ozwater comes in. But it's like, I can't stop the Ozwater becomes from coming in because it's a different product.
Okay, maybe. It's interesting to me because, of course, I remember when the Talmud was the radical new product that had bolded Rashi's.
Oh, yeah.
By bolded Rashi to Berem Atchil, that was a whole new universe. So times change. I don't know. Because we might think that we have an interest. Let's suppose that the Talmud person put his life fortune in producing 20,000 copies of the existing Talmud Shas, and he's going to go bankrupt. And we want people to invest in producing large amounts and not have to be the risk that after they produce it, someone will come out with something better, as long as it was best at the time they produced it. So maybe...
Why do we
have that interest?
Because otherwise everyone will just produce ad hoc, and it'll let us lower prices because we have economy of scale.
I mean, why do we have patents?
I don't know if we have... That's a whole controversy. Do we have copyrights and patents in halacha? Right, that's exactly... Right, that is exactly the issue. You might say that's the model, right? But that we let you sell all the merchandise you have if that's what Zilazin Ashir Chutaychu is. It's an interesting model. Yes, yes.
So I was interested in something very similar to Avi.
Yeah.
And I have two ways of presenting it. Right, either in our Wonder Bread is equal bread case. So the people buying Wonder Bread because Wonder Bread is the only one there don't really want Wonder Bread. It's just their only choice.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like I'm taking away customers from these merchants. I'm taking away people who have no other choice.
I'm taking away captive customers.
Yeah. All markets overlap at some point, right? Meaning, no matter what, people have a limited amount of money, and assuming they're not going to sit on it, so if there's one store in town, it'll sell everything because. But it's fine. I'm not going to tell someone they can't start bringing in, you know, computers. They can't bring in iPads because, you know, long term it will affect the sale of toy cars. Like, at some point, different products. So it's fine. There's an overlap, but we don't care because they're different products. And this is so that the Roman's quoting that we saw in a bunch of regional already is that something of significantly different quality is considered a different product. So yeah, the overlap will hurt, right? Bringing these Eagle Bread in, something that's better. Well, I would think most people would say the reverse, right? Right.
No. The point is that's the third, right? Is that something's better for some person isn't better for somebody else, and so it's different. Every differentiation and price or quality is a different good.
Significant difference in quality is going to be a different good. No, the
big
same.
Enough market, you don't need a significant difference.
I'm saying the word significant will depend on what your situation is.
Yeah.
I'm saying same product, different price is the exact problem. That's not a different good. That's the same product with a different price. That's what we've been discussing. Now we're talking about not necessarily a radically different price, but a different product.
It has the same effect, but it's not the same. Yeah, but the point is that this is a loophole, right? This is like
this is that people can sell stuff that no one else is selling yet.
Yeah, and if you
even though it'll hurt the market.
Rolex, and I have a
okay.
Rolex, it's
okay.
Okay.
Yes, Ellie.
In this context.
Yeah.
Can we there's something called the elasticity of demand for luxury items. Right? There's something for the elasticity of demand for luxury items.
Yeah.
So Wonder Bread is a standard item.
So we could absolutely make a distinction which has not yet been introduced in the Rishonim between luxury items and staples.
I think, yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's made to be a staple now.
Why does it?
It's inherent.
It's inherent.
Everyone realized they were paying for air. And
no,
all right. Okay, we all get the problems. We all get that the challenge, right, that this is, you know, really an interesting question about whether debates among us are going to boil down to debates about what we believe in economics or debates about what we believe the text says and how halacha should proceed from here.
Or an underlying value that isn't stated.
Because the texts don't frame it that way.
Yeah, but that's the point, right, is that Rabban has to adhere to a set of texts. But he has a set of values that are important to him in his community and his market.
So he's struggling. Okay, I'm open to all of these possibilities. What I really want you to get is the recognition of how open the space is. And if you just read the summary article, you would think that halakha is cut and dried, and we knew it. Right? And all anybody has to do is read the literature, and it comes to a clear conclusion. And the answer is at least as of the 13th century, right? People were still making these enormous leaps. And if we just introduced the luxury non-luxury good distinction, we're just doing exactly the same thing that Rami Gash did, and the Ramban did in the Mikhei Yosef, which is we're taking the halacha as it just on the books and saying, but gee, intuitively it doesn't make sense that it should apply in that case. And also recognizing that the halacha as it is depends on the existence of certain kinds of mechanisms. So what do we do? Right. So let's say. Ramban's notion that we could always. What do we do if the halacha is that you are not allowed to introduce outside competition because after all you can always just lower the prices by fiat. So what happens if you have a situation where you can't lower the prices by fiat because it's against the law, as it is in the U.S. For Beit Din to issue anti-competitive regulation might very well be illegal. For any kind of communal organization to fix prices might very well be illegal. Let's say for matzah, right? There are allegations about this every year about price fixing for matzah. So now the law is that you can't keep out outside competition, but the reason is because you can always lower the prices by yourself. What happens if we can no longer lower the prices by yourself? Does the law change, or are we stuck?
That depends if this is answering to a different value that isn't stated or not.
Even if I'm not introducing any values, I'm just saying that he says what the halacha is and he says why. And the why doesn't apply anymore. So does the halacha automatically change because the why doesn't apply, or do we say the law is the law?
I mean, unless that's not the why, right? Unless you're coming with cause and effect averse, and that the law is you can't introduce competition, and one of the ways out is if you feel like this is a bad situation is.
No, he says kevan, doesn't he?
Does he?
I think it's pretty clear he says it causally, but we could have that argument too. We could have that argument too.
He says vibo v'ni masa blozer by who? He thinks it's an out.
But why is it, the out is relevant? Because otherwise he wouldn't make the halacha that way.
I think that's an assumption.
Okay. You can make that assumption. You can challenge it as well. Okay. So now we have to figure out where we go from here. This is both an intellectual question and a practical question, because we do need somehow to cover vast amounts of material that we have.
Request. Can we stop using the word vast?
Sure. Yeah, sorry, I should stop saying that. We have to cover more.
Enormous.
We have to cover more.
Large.
We have to cover more.
Majestic.
Pardon?
A majestic amount of
material. Magisterial.
Okay, so we have to start. Well, I'm going to tell you. So what we're going to say is we're going to stipulate that the Rashba and the Ritva, which would have been nice to do as an exercise, but how to read, you know, right, when I tried to show you, right, that the Rashba and the Ritva, same as you did with Tosfos, you can watch the structure and then just look at the places where they introduce things that are different. In this case, they introduce interesting things that are different. But fundamentally, what the Rashba and the Ritva matter to us is really just the interesting. We've had an underlying question about whether or not we paskin like Rav Huna, and we've seen, and I'm just interested in having you collect the ways in which we can or cannot paskin like Rav Huna, and one of the interesting things is that we've now decided that Rav Huna depends on a machlokas tanaim. So do we paskin the machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua, or do we paskin the machlokas between Rav Shem and Gamliel and the Chachamim? So the Rishonim come with an interesting chronological claim, that the fasting intermediate claim that if Rav Huna had known about the machlokas Rav Shem ben Gamliel and the Chachamim and paskin like Rav Shem ben Gamliel, we would paskin like him. But because he didn't know about the machlokas, therefore we don't. Which is this amazing formal solution. That's basically what I wanted the Rashba and the Ritva for. Except for I want to take a look at on the last page of the Ritva, the second page of the Ritva. So I want to look at the last page of the, there are two things I want to point out. One of which is in the first underlined section. So here we have Rabbeinu Tam again, and again we're collecting Rabbeinu Tams. So right. So in the second paragraph of the page, we're talking about taxes now, right? If you pay the karga, then right. If you pay the karga locally, they can't keep you out. So there's a machloket. Some people say you have to pay the complete karga. And some people say you only have to pay part of the karga. And he says that there's actually a textual difference. Whether it's you have to be, whether you're mishalim the karga, or whether you're shayach b'karga, or shadi b'karga, or shayach b'karga. And then he says, mikan dan rabbeinu tam. Al b'nei ir achat, shaholchin lahalvot b'ribit l'ir achat, shiacholin lakev alehen. Im lo yifru'u mehem emas, if you don't pay the taxes, or, new thing, Oshitner lehem maser harevach. Rabbeinu Tam says there's another solution. You can not only can you pay the taxes, you cannot pay the taxes to the king. You can pay a percentage of the profits to the locals, which he says is 10%. Tithe. Okay, and that's right. This is a whole new piece of legislation. Right, Rabbeinu Tam seems to have just made this up. You don't want to pay taxes, you're not politically elected, just pay 10%.
The custom in
you need to be in a tax district or you can be to a point where they're accept you.
So but he fixes the he, but he
wait,
sure. Anything, right? Because this is a question that's going on all over medieval Europe, right? This is a halachic question, it's a question going on all over. How do you deal with competition? Right? What are the local boundaries? Right? How do political boundaries relate to economic boundaries? So this is a price regulation, right? That all external competition can be you can always get out of it by paying 10%. But then he says underneath it, the ikir hadin nira, sheyipara ala esek shemis asek sham. So there's an underlying principle.
That might be the Ritva.
Yes, and that might be the Ritva, not Rabbeinu Tam. It seems the underlying principle is you cannot have a, right? One way of understanding why you have to pay taxes is if you don't pay taxes, you have a cost advantage. Right? So what we do is we impose a handicap, right, to make sure that your expenses are the same as the locals. That's one way of understanding it. Okay, I wanted to put that in. Then I want to take a look at the last paragraph. Zinahu de'ma'akvi alayhu. Omer Rabosei. I'm not sure what the Yod Aleph is supposed to be. Yeah, but it doesn't seem to fit so well. It seems like more like it should be some of blessed memory, but it doesn't fit. V'chein kas Rabbeinu Agadol Ramban Zal. Ki mash amar Rav Ibn Migash. The imozli abnei masa lo matzu umne ha'ir la'ak. He says umne again. Lo matzu umne ha'ir la'akev elahem kevan de'ika ravcha demasa. So about this position of the Rimigash, where he said that if the outsiders lower prices, the local craftsmen cannot prevent them from playing. So he wrote, right, so the Ramban Rosh is ze'eno, and right, which we saw, the Ramban rejects this. But then he has an interesting formulation which we haven't seen so far. The isochre ha'ir Einam miyakrim schorotam al bnei ha'ir shelo kemishpat, lama yasidu alehim. If the local merchants are not price gouging, why should they lose? Right? This is whole new, right? Right? So now we can assimilate this to ona. Right? What does it mean to be miyakir shelo kedin? Right? Is it ona? Is it price gouging? Is it windfall profits? Right, whole new categories. I would argue that that in the school of Ramban, they really presume heavy regulation, and they really presume that they have the capacity to manipulate prices, that they have the capacity to control, right, they have the capacity to regulate entry, and that may very well have been an accurate description of their economic reality, that they actually had these powers. Whether those powers accomplished what they thought they did or not. But they had these formal powers. So the question is, we don't. Right? We really, really don't. So even if this halacha is the regnant thing, does it have anything to do with us? We might think that they were wrong about, right, that they had these powers, but they were wrong about the consequences of those powers. And B, we don't have those powers. So what happens to halacha? Right? Because I think that every stage of this tradition after the Rimigash, right? The Rimigash opened up a free market world, and that seems to have been his position. And then the whole school of Ramban spends all his time cutting the Rimigash back down to size. Rabbeinu Tam is on a wholly different axis, but we have to try and put all of Rabbeinu Tam together because it seems to me likely there are so many. There are so many places where a position of Rabbeinu Tam is quoted that it seems to me very likely that Rabbeinu Tam had a comprehensive vision, and that right trying to deal with this position in isolation is an error, and that really because on every single detail of this, Rabbeinu Tam has something unique to say. So it seems to me that we really should construct a whole notion of Ramban. Okay, so I think. Realistically, that we've gone about as far as we can go today. The question is, so I'm going to say it as follows. If you got through the packet today, great. If not, we're going to spend some time in Shira reading highlights of the rest of it. But I gave out another thing of Makara tomorrow, which is the Ravan. And I think that doing the Ravan in detail inside is more important than reading these inside. So if you haven't finished this, go to the Ravan tomorrow. And tomorrow, I will do some highlights of this. But we're going to basically the purpose of Shira tomorrow is to do the is to do the Rabban.
I'm
going to
do a Chazara Shira on this today.
And you do a Chazara Shira on this today, and you can go through
this.
Oh no, not this. Sorry, I lied.
Oh, we did before.
Is there any way you could email out the Rabban?
Rabban is out. It should be out already. If it's not, I said to Bruna, so ask Bruna.
She has it already.
She has it already.
Okay.
She has it already. If not, I can. Jacob has my. Bruna left. Jacob has my jump drive. So, all right. So I'll just download it onto jump drive. You can have it, and Jacob can email it. It's not on that drive. I have to put it on. Okay. So that's how we'll do it. And you can decide to go back and read the other things independently afterwards if you want. But we're going to move on to the Ravan tomorrow. And then Friday we're going to do, the demonstration of different ways to organize Sugyot, which I think are which will let you do the equivalent of an 8-minute Daf Yomi perhaps eventually, or to keep lots of things in mind. And Monday we're going to start the Tshuvot Amar Rufya. And just to recognize, which is always very scary, when I wake up and realize we have 9 shiurim left before we're dismissed, before we have to write.
When are the Yohannes coming? At what time?
Tomorrow. I think Ted Rosenbaum is going to be here for shiur, but schedule at 1 is normal, and that Dr. Gaynor will show up somewhere around 3:30.
So he'll be speaking during.
No, he's just going to participate in shiur. And then he and Dr. Gaynor together will run the afternoon.
Right after shift.
Pretty much.
And what are we expecting that to go to?
So, we're expecting that to go to dinner. And we're going to try and make sure, but we're going to have make sure that we have at least... Right. So I'm going to... We're going to make sure that there's hope at least a half hour, hopefully 45-minute gap between when I finish talking and they start.
We drive to Crescent Ridge in that time.
Which we could try if ice cream is helpful.
Are there
marmacomas
for the economists?
No. There are no marmacomas for the economists. Except that, as I would say, if tonight...
Next week, we will
right,
be
so if tonight you have a chance, I would suggest that you try and go through one of the summaries just so you're ready. You know the standard halakha.
Like one of the Rabbi Jaffer
articles. Like the Rabbi Jaffer article, one of those. You start reading that, just get a sense of what other people say.